I think most of us feel like we're pretty honest people, especially now that we're sober. But when we dig a little deeper, especially earlier in sobriety, we find there are things that we still haven't been honest about. Things like how we're feeling, what we believe is right or wrong, justifying old behaviors, or making excuses. The more we can recognize those little bits of dishonesty and change the behaviors, the stronger we'll feel both mentally and emotionally. So stay tuned for a brutally honest conversation about honesty.
Welcome to Through the Glass Recovery Podcast, where we believe that connection is the opposite of addiction, vulnerability is the antidote to shame, and that recovery isn't just rewarding, but it's also a lot of fun. We're your hosts, Julie and Steve. Listen as we get together with friends to shed light on the hard things, talk about the other side of addiction, and how we create a life so full there's no space left for alcohol.
If you feel like you've been trying and trying to get sober and it's still not sticking, maybe it's time to try something you've never tried before. Get outside the box, find some new tools, make some new connections, and see if that's the piece that's been missing. We offer a free Zoom meeting on Monday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's informal and laid back, and it's a great place to find some like-minded people and make some new friends. You can get more info on our website at throughtheglassrecovery.com.
All right. So welcome to episode 83 of Through the Glass Recovery Podcast. I am really looking forward to this conversation. We have all newcomers to our podcast tonight, which doesn't happen very often anymore. So we love fresh blood. And we have a squirmy topic on top of all of it. So I think it should be a great conversation. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and let Kenny start us off with an introduction.
I was hoping someone else would start off so that I can kind of know how I'm going to do it. I was going to jump off their back, but I'll start. So, yeah, I'm Kenny Hill. I run a private practice in Sacramento called Recovery Hill. And my private practice focuses on substance abuse and trauma. And I would say the bigger thing, like there's a, you know, that's the theme now if you're working in the addiction world is you're combining trauma along with the addiction work. So I would say what I do primarily, if I had to kind of narrow it down, is I try to help people do things that they otherwise thought was impossible. And I help build resiliency within a client over a prolonged period of time so that they can sustain sobriety, not just get abstinent, but have this sustainable sobriety. So that's what I do professionally. I also have a podcast called the Patina to Podcast. That's just getting rolling. And again, the underlining theme within that podcast is resiliency. So I talk to guests of all different types. I try to make it guests that are very relatable. That's just the common man and woman that you would find at the grocery store or something like that. And so, but yeah, the underlining theme is resiliency. And we just kind of follow the guest origin story and follow that path and pick up on areas where they chose to make decisions that benefited them that otherwise they, you know, they wish they wouldn't, they wish they could avoid, but otherwise did because they knew it would be good for them. So that's, yeah, that's the Patina podcast. I've been sober for 17 years and yeah, I can keep, there's a whole list of things I could keep talking about, but I guess that'll probably be in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely send us your bio, send us the link to your podcast, all of that stuff. And for our listeners, you guys know you can go check the show notes and find out more about all of these people and make sure you check out all of their projects in the recovery community. But yeah, Kenny, it's great to have you.
Yep.
Super excited to get to chat with you tonight. And next, we're going to go with Adam.
All right. Hey, everybody. My name's Adam Head. I'm really only on Twitter right now, or I guess X at the Adam Head. I am not a recovery professional or recovery coach or anything like that. I'm actually a safety consultant. So anything pertaining to OSHA and risk loss management mitigation, particularly in construction and industrial sectors, is kind of my forte. I've been sober just over 5 years. I would say I've been what I consider effortlessly sober for about 2.5 of those, when I kind of got on the recovery train and was really looking at the underlying reasons for why I was running away from myself with drinking and alcohol. So I guess my big philosophy is to look at principles over methods, and I tend to guide my content with that as the direction I like to go in. So yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
Yeah, been following you for a while, and I love your content on X, and I love the way you think and how you try and open that box and try and discover a little bit more about yourself and throw it out into the world and let everyone see what their, or to see where you could see what their opinion is and their thoughts are on the same thing. It's just a neat discussion to be a part of and watch.
Great. Thank you.
So it was nice having you on.
Yeah, really good to have you here. And last but not least is Emily.
Hi. So I have about 10 years. I just celebrated 10 years in December. Sober, clean and sober, whatever you want to call it. And it's been the best 10 years of my life. You know, it took me a while to get here, and I had to take every drink I took in order to find my way. So I am in a 12-step recovery program, and that's just the way that worked for me. And I also, sorry, I have a frog in my throat for all days. I also, I'm part of a real estate brokerage, and we created a recovery community within that brokerage for real estate agents, because we are a very substance heavy industry. Everything's a happy hour, you know, every networking event and every, you know, all the stuff that goes on. And it's a high stress job. And so we see a lot of that. So we created this community where like 700 strong just within our brokerage. And it's amazing. It's what I like to call like non-denominational. Like, you don't need to be in a 12-step program. Some people do yoga. Some people do, you know, other meditations. Some people do other different types of, you know, we have a guy that he's on our board and he climbs mountains. That's his thing. So that's how he stays sober. And it's like, whatever it takes, man, whatever works for you, you know? So yeah, so I've been an agent for about 7.5 years now. Been sober for 10. So you can see that one had to happen before the other could happen. Yeah. And my hashtag is real estate recovery and rescue dogs. So my big dream is to, at some point, you know, earn enough money to fund or bankroll or find investors to help me grow a sober living community that is also a dog rescue that's intertwined, where I picture like this cottage colony, you know, and there's sober people living in the cottages, and they're, you know, they're maybe a little further in their journey than just straight out of detox or whatever. And they work at the rescue and they have to foster in their cottage and whatever, you know. I just have all these ideas. So yeah, so that's a little bit about me. And I live on beautiful Cape Cod, and I love it here, and I get a lot of solace and peace just, you know, walking on the beach or even just sitting down there when it's too cold. It's like, when I think about my higher power, all I have to do is like look at the ocean, you know. Obviously I'm not the most powerful thing in the world, so that's enough.
Really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you. I love that we have voices coming from all different areas and different versions of recovery. I think that's my favorite thing about this podcast is, you know, whatever works for you is awesome. And I think every voice and every story needs to be heard. So really happy to have all three of you with us tonight. So for our topic, show of hands, how many of us were great liars when we were in active addiction? Yeah. Okay, so that's all of us since this is an audio only podcast. Yeah, so dishonesty tends to go hand in hand with drinking to excess, and dishonesty usually comes with a lot of guilt, regret, denial, and avoidance. For most of us, getting sober meant that we also had to get honest. So what does that look like for you? What have you had to get honest about, and how did it affect your life and your recovery?
The floor is yours.
Should we just jump in here?
Just jump in.
Yeah,
let's whoever wants to go first, and then we just let it fly.
All right, I'll start if nobody else wants to. For me, I've been thinking about it since I saw the topic, and a lot of my dishonesty was with myself. As I was working steps, I remember reading, where was I, you know, dishonest, fearful, self-seeking, afraid, you know, whatever, and being like, I wasn't dishonest, I was always honest, and that in and of itself was dishonest. So, you know, I didn't do a lot of ripping people off in the what I think of as like the expected way, you know, but I did things, you know, like I stole from employers. I worked at a CD place once, or, you know, a record store when I was young. And man, that was a fun place to get new music from. And then I had the money to spend on what I wanted to spend it on if I did that, you know? So little ways like that, I was really dishonest by not showing up and not telling people why I wasn't showing up. I would make up excuses for why I couldn't go to things, not because I started drinking in the morning and couldn't drive by 2 in the afternoon. You know, I wouldn't tell them that. It would always be some other reason. So I just wasn't there, you know? I was not present. I wasn't participating in my own life or in the lives of people I loved, you know? I was a big hider. Like, I would just try to hide everything I was doing all the time. And if anybody tried to call me on it, or it was like, oh, not talking to them anymore. Like, you know, and so they'd be like, what did I do? You know, but I just didn't, oh, if you're on to me, then you can't be part of my life. Yeah, so there was a lot of stuff like that. There was a lot of like creative math in one situation that I was in. And like, I'd borrow and I would put it back, but it wasn't supposed to be what was happening. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'd borrow from it, and then I had till the end of the month, you know, to make it up. And it got real scary sometimes when that money just wasn't there. And it was like, what am I going to do? And then, yeah. So I fudged more than I outright pickpocketed someone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it certainly would have gotten there. It was towards the end. It was really bad. And I would play these games of like, where am I going to pull money out of today? Do I have anything that still has tags on it or isn't out of the package? Do I have money in the couch or an old purse I threw in the closet? Is there any change in the bottom? Like, and when you get to that point and you've already raided all those spots and there's no more coming, it's like, that's when you get to the point of, well, how am I going to get what I need or what I want, you know? And, you know, there were times like, so for a long time, I had lived downstairs from my parents. They had a basement apartment that I rented for way below fair market. So I was stealing from them in a way, you know, they could gotten better money for that. And I was taking that spot of somebody because I couldn't get my shit together. Oh yeah, we can swear. could not get
yep, no together. Problem.
Yeah. So just all those little ways that it really, when you look at it, it's like I was stealing and I was dishonest. And, you know, I stole from relationships that I wasn't honest about, things I did, or, you know, people that, again, that I just never spoke to again because I did something shady and I was so ashamed that they would find out. And so I just distanced myself, you know, and just didn't respond to the wedding invitation or didn't, you know, just those kind of things, like never RSVP'd when I look at it now and I'm like, she probably wanted to know, like, either way, like, why are they not RSVPing, you know? And it's like, I can't really tell you why, but there's a reason I'm not coming, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so that was a lot of it for me. I know, as the other guys share, things are going to pop up in my brain because that's just how it works.
That's why we do it this way. It makes everybody think.
Yeah, totally. I'm in the last year diagnosed with ADHD. Finally, I understand like what is wrong with me. I mean, not wrong, but like why my brain works like this. So my working memory issues make a lot more sense. I thought I was coming down with Alzheimer's at 47. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, things will pop up and stuff. So I'll let someone else talk, and hopefully it's okay to just be like, oh.
Yeah, that's what we do here for sure.
Yep, it is. That's what we're all about. Roundtable discussion. Go for it.
Yeah, I can go, Adam. Thanks. I think so. Within the intro, there's a focus of lying within the addiction and our time in addiction. I was a liar far before like my addiction, you know, like as a kid and that kind of stuff. Like, I think a lot of it was about identity, wanting to be impressive to other people, that kind of stuff. So there was always like little lies here and there. Like, I can't remember necessarily having huge lies off the top of my head, but the lies got bigger as addiction came, right? So I remember, like, so I'm a combat veteran with PTSD, and I was already an alcoholic before I went in the military. I went into the military at 18, and I was already drinking a fifth a night at that point, right? So I was already alcoholic before joining. In fact, my first detox was basic training. So
I was going to say basic.
My first detox. And my second detox was Afghanistan. So that wasn't fun either.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so I only say that to say, when I got out of the military and they gave me $15,000 of, you know, medical, with my medical discharge, and all of that chopped up real nicely and went into my nose very easily and very quickly, you know, like, when my behavior began to slip and began to become very odd, and I began to become extremely thin and all these sorts of things, whenever there was like a side look toward me, or whenever I felt like there was like judgment toward me, I had this great card that I can pull, you know, like, I'm a combat veteran with PTSD. How dare you question me? You know, and that was just a big lie. I was blaming my behaviors and how my life was going on this combat PTSD card. And I knew full well, like, I was using that, but also there's a part of me that wanted that to be true. Like, so it's hard for me to decipher between the difference of I'm obviously lying, but also I'm a victim and here's the reason why. And so it's hard to kind of decipher that for me. Yeah, I think, like, let's see. I don't know. I have several things that I wanted to say, but like, I don't know. Are we going to talk about like now that we're sober, or do I need to wait for that part of the discussion?
Whatever
you want to go. Okay. Yeah. There's no rules there. We okay. Like, no rules. It's our favorite. So
yeah. Yeah. So I think now with sobriety, it's something where like the consequence of dishonesty is so overwhelming with this internal voice that used to only sound like an internal critic, but now sounds more like an internal accountability partner most of the time. And so, like, when there is lie now, if it's small, like, even say, like, with my kids, okay, so, you lost your tooth. Awesome, buddy. Well, the tooth fairy's going to come tonight, right? Santa's coming this year, is, you know, all that sort of stuff. So there's like little things there where, like, with the kid that's 4, not a big issue, but the kid that's 9, we had to have a conversation this year, right? Because my internal accountability source was like, dude, like, the older he gets, the more disappointed he's going to get, the more you're going to rock his world and potentially rock a future faith system for him if you continue to lie to him about this. So that was a hard conversation we had to have. And so there's little things now, I think, like, there, and all of it's ego driven, right? So like, if a client texts me and then I don't text them back immediately because I do something like I wish text would have it to where you could mark it as unread, so it still shows up as, you know, bold or whatever, yeah. But it doesn't. So I'll read the text and then I'll be like, okay, I can't respond right now. So then I'll I'm going to respond later, and I completely forget. And then by the time I respond later, or even if this is even more embarrassing, if the client's like, hey, by the way, you know, I still asked you a question, are you going to respond? Then like I have this natural inclination to say something like, hey, sorry, buddy. Like, I meant to push send, but I didn't push send, which is a total lie.
Yeah.
It's a total lie. I just forgot to get back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's like this natural inclination to try to hide the fact that I was not attuned to them in their text in the moment. I was too busy for them and I didn't get back to them. But then when I respond with what I'm embarrassed to say, which is like, hey, I completely forgot, my bad, there's never like shame thrown. There's never like, how dare you? Like, we're done. You're fired as my therapist. There's not anything like that done. But my internal, like, there's this internal part in there that's like, okay, like, they're going to hand it to you. Like, you're going to be in big trouble now for lying. And so there's some of that too. But yeah, I think there's, I wanted to say, like, how am I going to say this? There's these, I think sometimes there's like these internal battles where, like, I have to check whether it's ego or whether it's worth it. Cause part of it's like, if I am not honest now, then when there's a part of myself that's
later.
Like, no. Well, yes, that too. But there's a part of it where it's like this internal advocate, like, you need to advocate for yourself. And I've done enough of not advocating for myself to where I feel shame afterwards. I feel awful. Like, I feel mad at myself. It other people get the brunt of it because I'm mad at myself for not advocating and being honest in a situation. So there's that. But then there's this careful balance of like, maybe I just need to shut up and not continue this argument with my wife because I need to get my point across because my ego is hurt or something. Right. So I think they're like, it seems like that would be an obvious marker in your brain where you're like, okay, on one end, it's not about ego, or it is about ego with your wife, so just shut up. On the other end, it's about advocacy for yourself. So, but the lines are kind of blurred for me a little bit. And it's hard to tell the difference sometimes, and I can get myself into trouble with that. But yeah, I had lots of other thoughts, but I'm going to shut up for right now.
Well, while you were the last part there, I kept thinking that one of the recurring themes that I used, especially in the early stages of my sobriety, was, does this make me right, or does this give me what I want? And when I got down to, this goes with the honesty part and dishonesty, but when I finally was able to clarify my own values and what I wanted my life to look like, and then I could guide my decisions with, is this my ego saying I want this because I want to be right? Or is this my self saying I want this because this is what I want? And if that decision is guiding me towards what I want versus this need to be right, I tried to go with the one giving me what I want. And that kept me out of a lot of trouble in the beginning. That was just kind of my guiding mantra with everything. And then every now and then, I find myself in a really sweet spot where what I want is also what is right. And when that happens, the day is just like perfect.
Right?
It's one of those days you're just like, man, everything is perfect.
Just like when I call that my head and my heart aligned.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So it's like head, heart, mouth, right? And so if the head and if my head and my heart are in alignment, everything that comes out of my mouth,
right,
is going to do the right thing. It's going to guide me the right way and exactly what you said, right, with what I want. And it's going to be full of honesty because that's right. And if I go with what my head wants, this is how I did the same thing that you're talking about. If I go with what my head is telling me, that's going with what I want instead of what's right. You know what I mean? And if I go with my heart goes with what's right. So when they both align, it's like, that's that magical day. That's that magical moment.
Yep.
Completely.
Easy decisions.
Yeah.
I think like the longer you're in recovery, the more often that happens, right? Like, I don't think I ever lived my life where my head and my heart were aligned, not on any kind of regular basis for like most of my life. Not even, I didn't really start drinking heavily until I was like 30. But even before that, that's not how I lived. It was never, I never even had any awareness of that. I know now, like, if I'm dishonest, I can feel it, like, physically in my body. Like, my heart starts racing.
Yeah.
And I get all tense and I'll start sweating and, like, and a lot of times it's not even that I'm lying. It's just I don't want somebody to find out about something. I think Emily kind of touched on that. Like, I wasn't so much an outward liar, but I was really careful to hide and cover up everything that might really point to who I really was.
Interesting.
Lies of omission. Yeah, one of the things I was going to say, what I had to get most honest with myself about, and I should say where I was probably most dishonest in my life, was what I was telling myself about my quality and my contentment with my life where I was. Because I knew that I was capable of so much more, and that I had kind of been settling for a really long time with for the easy wins and the easy, oh, this will work for right now. All the way down to the fact, I mean, I had to come to grips with that from my marriage and my divorce, and all the blaming that went on with the reason for the divorce, between it being her fault, then it was my fault, and it was all my fault, to finally understanding that it was a relationship that just wasn't working. And that was fuel for the way you were feeling, I was feeling, and being dishonest with myself about how I was feeling, and then being dishonest with others by not letting anyone know how I was feeling. And that was the biggest hurdle for me to overcome. And once I finally did, I shouldn't say I finally did, with probably anybody except like my parents, I am completely open with feelings, and I don't know what it is. I still haven't figured out what this block is that I have with them specifically. I've got theories and stuff, but with just about anybody else, I can be completely 100% honest. And with them, it's like, how you doing today? Like, I'm good. It's probably the guilt and the you know, putting them through everything that I did with trying to get sober. And it's like, I don't even want to touch the subject, but you might be thinking that I might be having a hard time. You know, I don't even want to put that on you. And so anyway, that's one of the internal things.
Yeah.
But
for me too, I was always terrified of getting caught since I was really little. And I wasn't beaten or anything. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. And that went into my drinking too, like getting caught with the worst thing.
I'm glad you said that, because it took me a couple years of working with a CBT therapist for her to finally pull this out of me. And we were doing, what did she call it? She called it a think and report. So basically we were discussing the last time I had drank. And she finally asked the questions either in the right sequence or used the right wording or something about trying to get down to the belief behind the behavior. And when we finally got to this one question, and she said, wait, say that again. And I said, well, I was drinking because I knew that I couldn't get caught. And she goes, now let's look at that sentence. And she goes, all these kind of, we talked about it, but basically I had this belief that it's okay as long as I don't get caught. Mm-hmm. And apparently this is very common, you know, with everybody, regardless of where you drink or not. But yes, I had the exact same thing. But I was so like, where did I develop this? Because I was not dishonest up until I started drinking. Like, the lying then was more about self-preservation.
Yeah.
But I finally, my dad used to have this saying, and it was, you know, he meant well by it, and I'm sure it's something that he heard growing up too, but it was, it only takes one aw shit to wipe out 1,000 attaboys. Mm-hmm. Mm. Like, somebody can tell you 1,000 times you've done a great job, and you mess up one time, and guess what? All those great jobs are gone.
Yeah. That's like, I guess that's how you create a perfectionist out of child. Like, I feel like my dad never said exactly that, but I feel that deeply, because that was my belief that I grew up with.
Exactly. It never dawned on me, because I mean, I heard that all the time growing up, and it was never in the context of me failing. It was just, yeah, just something that was said. And, you know, I guess as 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old me internalized that, and then it helped fuel this feeling of, as long as I don't get caught, it's okay. Which I really had no idea that I had created this belief. But once I figured that out, that's why I said, when I said effortless recovery earlier, that's what I meant. As soon as I figured that out, I was like, well, I'll be damned.
Game changer. I won't be too long. Julie, you said about the feeling of lying now when you like sweat and it gets uncomfortable. It hurts. It's like almost heart-wrenching, right? Especially when you like, you know, it's coming out of your mouth and you're like, God, what am I doing right now? And still follow through with it. The interesting part was, is when you talked about that, I understand that feeling. I got the same feeling when I started feeling it, telling the truth. So lying was absolutely comfortable.
Yeah.
Right? It became my social norm. That's how I protected myself. That's how I stopped myself from getting caught. That's how I operated. I had a couple of different lives that I was managing. And inside of those lives that I was managing, I made sure that those people never saw those people. So the lies would maintain themselves. Lying became absolutely comfortable. I didn't sweat at all when I lied, because that was my truth. When I went to start telling the truth, I felt that exact same way. I sweated. I was nervous as hell. It was scary as all get out. It was painful. It was as painful as lying is now. Mm. And when you said that, I was like, I remember telling the truth and it feeling that same way.
It's such a good indicator of the transformation, right? I think that's really interesting.
It reminded me of just being like, I don't know, 8 years old and visiting my Nana and breaking her toilet seat because I was standing up on the toilet in her senior living home, going through her stuff, snooping, and like, just, you know, I'm like, what'd she get up here? You know? And it was like a rinky-dink one and it cracked. And I come out and somebody else goes in and they were like, what happened? I was like, I don't know. Did you break it? No. Was it me? Like, is anybody really going to be mad at me for that? No. They wouldn't know how it broke, or I wouldn't even tell them the whole truth of like, I was snooping and, you know, but it's like at 8 years old, my instant reaction was just deny, deny, deny. Mm-hmm. If you don't admit it, you can't get in trouble, you know?
That right there, though, that's what, like, I did that. I can feel that. Like, I'm sure that I did all the same similar things where you just don't want them to know, so you deny it, right? But that carries into such big things. Like, to me, that goes back to the perfectionism, right? Like, God forbid anybody know I made a mistake, or that I screwed up, or that I'm not perfect, or that I have this flaw. And that was my life. That was me. That's all of the lies, for the most part, were just trying to cover up all of the imperfections. And like, nobody was going to hate me for some of the things that I did. It's not like, you know, that it was going to end my world or that I was going to lose friends or whatever. But just God forbid anybody know any of it. And then I turned into an alcoholic and I was hiding that on top of it because God forbid anybody know, right? Like, that's what it was for. It was all shame. I just didn't want anybody to know I wasn't perfect. And that just added to it. Yeah. Well, I feel that. Like, I can imagine 8-year-old me doing the same exact thing.
I remember when I was like between, I don't know, 10, 11 and like 13. I remember 13 because I moved. And the biggest thing that I had to hide was who was the boy I actually liked. And if anyone found out, I was going to die. Like, I was convinced that I would just die on the spot if anyone really knew me or knew who I really liked. And so I made up imaginary boyfriends from like the summer and stuff. It was just like, why even go that far with it? You know, why not just whatever, just say, I don't like anybody instead. No, oh, it's this boy I met when I was camping in Maine. Blah, 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 blah. Like, it just come up with a whole thing. Like, yeah, those are the things I look back on and I'm like, that's just weird, you know, the behavior. But it was
trying to counter all of that dishonesty, because that's just your ego popping up to protect yourself. But two, what I've really been focusing on the last 4 or 5 months is embracing my humanity. I mean, it's recovering from being the perfectionist, like I'm saying, but when you realize that, hey, you're a human having a human experience, there's going to be shit. You know, and when you embrace the fact that you're going to have it, might as well run with it and love it. And it's hard to wrap my head around that concept 100% and live it in every moment, but I make an effort to, and I see an exponential increase in the quality of my life.
Absolutely. And
others around me, at least my perception of it.
So story. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've either made a mistake at work and the mistake, you know, is going to cost some money. And instead of admitting the mistake or whatever that may be, or wanting to tell someone that, you know, something broke because I know they're not going to, you know, or it was my fault because I made that decision or whatever it was. Every time I did not want to tell the truth. I wanted to, I would take the time to try and build a story that made enough sense where I didn't have to take the ownership of it. Not so much as throw other people under the bus, but it was okay if they got in a little bit of trouble along the way. And that to me was, and I'm listening to everybody talk, and that to me, I was like built, I went right to shame, not guilt. I bypassed guilt and went right to shame. So like, if I made the mistake, that should just be guilt, right? I shouldn't shame. So like my self-worth, that's all self-worth based. So I'm like all, everything's in the tank. I bypass guilt and I'm shame. I am bad now for making this mistake. So I would completely do whatever I could to avoid the whole thing, right? Just the little white lies that stack up.
Oh, yeah. Penny, do you have anything? You've been quiet.
Yeah, I've just been kind of taking in what everybody's saying. I think I resonate with some of it. Some of it I don't, but I think there's things that I resonate in there. Even Steve, just the thing that you were just saying, where these lies stack up, and then you know you're connecting to that shame of this identity of, you know, well, the shame is I am whatever this perceived sin is, this is what I am, right? So, yeah, I, you know, part of it is, since this is a discussion of honesty, is I am very tired. So I'm like, I'm hanging in there. And I'm hanging in there right now. I had a really long training run today. And so part of it is I'm just kind of in this, which is not good for a podcast. I'm in this mode where I'm like sitting in here and just like resonating. But not a lot of feedback is coming back from me. So there's my honesty for you.
It's totally allowed, though. I love it. Now, can we talk a little bit about like the feeling of freedom that comes with finally being honest? Like I started my recovery story, like this round of sobriety, I started going to meetings on Zoom. And once I found them, I wanted to go to them all the time. And so I was going to like 3 or 4 a week. And I told my family that I found an online support group for people with anxiety. Because that somehow was more acceptable than, like, they didn't know. Nobody knew I had a problem with drinking, right? So I was like, sorry, here's dinner. I threw it on the table. And then I ran upstairs and got on my computer so I could talk to these people that actually understood me. And it took like 2 months before I finally told my husband, so, hey, here's what these meetings are really about. And like, it lifted, like I felt free. He was great. He was like, oh, I'm so glad you found something that's helping you. And it was like the first time I said out loud, I have an alcohol problem and these people are really helping me. And then from there, it was like this sense of freedom. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to start telling the truth about everything now. And that's when I was, you know, started like Adam was talking about the perfectionism and the flaws and all of that and just being human. Like I started letting myself show up just as a human at that moment. And the sense of freedom that comes with that is incredible. Even if you do have to stop and go back and show up and be honest and be like, hey, so actually I lied. Here's what really happened or whatever. Like the freedom feels so much better that it's so worth it. I just never gave honesty a chance for, you know, the first 39 years of my life. But yeah, it's a great way to live.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was kind of mentioning earlier. Like there's consequences for lying, right? And then that stuff piles up over time. So the relief that you get, like I was mentioning earlier, it's almost like you almost feel... Like when someone is like, well, yeah, no big deal. You almost feel kind of like, why did I do that to myself for so long? Like, why did I put that pressure on myself for so long? Like, I feel like the reaction should be bigger. Like, I deserve a larger reaction for that. Like, either, even if it's a positive reaction, like, wow, thank you so much for being honest. That's incredible, Kenny. Wow, you're such a good person. or be mad at me, like, but make whatever the reaction is, make it more like, make it big, because what I'm feeling right now is big. So yeah,
I get that.
That's, I love funny. It I love it. Match the reaction to the feeling. That's like, yeah, my inner child.
I was so good at being dishonest that I had a lot of friends tell me when I stopped drinking, which I didn't tell anybody for 3 months, because just in case I wanted to go back to it, I wanted to have. So I was like in the closet sober for 3 months. But I had a lot of friends come up to me and be like, oh, I didn't know you had a problem. But yeah, because I hit everything. Because like, I would pre-drink, we'd go out, I'd try to drink like a respectable human being for the couple hours we were out. And I could always hold my liquor, so I wasn't like falling down drunk while I was out. And then I'd go home and like get the job finished until I passed out, ran out. So yeah, that was
so true.
It's so true. But I'm like, yeah, because I didn't do it in front of you. That's, I'm not gonna do that. Then I'd like, you know, tee everybody off. Like, they'd all be like, oh my god, Emily has a problem. So I had to be like, oh no, we're gonna keep this on the DL so nobody knows. So much that my denial was, I had to really break through that really hard to finally admit that I was an alcoholic, because I was like, no, I'm not that bad. I never like got divorced or, you know, lost custody of my kids or crashed up a car or like foreclosed in a house. Well, I never got married. I didn't have kids. I never bought a house. Like, that, it was like settling for one house and never getting those things. So of course I didn't lose them, you know. I lived in my parents' basement apartment by myself. So, but yeah, on the other side of that, man, the freedom is, my pink cloud was about 2-3 years long, because I was so elated to not be hiding and lying and doing all that anymore, to actually just be able to be and be me and come to terms with who I was and get comfortable in my own skin. And it's been, like I said, like the best 10 years of my life. I mean, it's just been incredible to me. And I grew up going to Halatine, like that was mandatory in my house, but I wasn't there for me. I was there because, you know, dad was an alcoholic or whatever. And, I never really applied it to myself. So you can go to meetings all day, but if you don't actually take the stuff you learn and apply it to your own life, it's not really going to have the same effect. But yeah, so it's been incredible. The other thing that's been really freeing for me is that every single day I turn, when you were talking about the alignment of the head and the heart and the, all that stuff, for me, it's like God's will. And my God, my higher power is, like I said, it's more like the universe, the ocean, Mother Nature, like that sort of thing. The universe is big for me, because all energy, matter is energy, you know, just that whole kind of thing. So when I say God, that's kind of what I mean. But when God's will lines up and I take my will out of the picture, like everything goes great. And when I try to pull it back and I'm like, I want what I want and I'm going to make it happen, and it just doesn't work out. And I'm like, why doesn't it work out? This stinks, you know, it's funny. So the freedom of like not having to be the one driving the bus all the time, and being able to just rely on the fact that the universe has my back and the law of attraction is real, and that I don't have to force things, you know, that's been like the best thing for me in my life.
Absolutely. I was going to say, you mentioned to be who you want to be or who you are. Mm-hmm. For me, probably the most freeing feeling was when I was honest with myself about my own beliefs. And I don't mean just spiritual, I just mean the beliefs that I held about myself. Mm-hmm. And determining which ones were actually mine, which ones were given to me through parenting, which ones were given to me through society, figuring out the ones that actually aligned with my values and getting rid of the ones that I was just kind of paying lip service to and truly getting honest with myself that way has changed my life immensely. And I think that's, you know, to me, that's what recovery is. We're all trying to get to some version of that through some way of getting there. So it's like I said, principles over methods any day, but that sense of freedom has just been far above anything else.
The most interesting part about that is those limiting beliefs. I'm just kind of going through this part of it right now myself, like realizing, waking up to what's been handed to me, what I've taken from society and made mine. And all of those that aren't mine that I've taken, that I've created, that I've allowed to be mine are the lie I decide to tell myself to protect myself from seeing the other side of it because I don't know it exists. But inside of all of that, I'm just figuring out like the freedom of letting that go. And I've done this a couple of times where I've like, oh my God, this isn't even mine. I'm just holding on to this because it came from over there, right? It came from a parent. It came from, you know, work. It came from the TV, right? And to let go of that has been absolutely, absolutely freeing. I remember my first moment of freedom, and that was when I started telling the truth instead of the lie. And I broke down in absolute tears because I heard other people tell the truth, and I was like, oh my God, I can actually say this stuff. Like the crazy that's going on in my mind right now has an actual place, a safe place to land. Like I don't have to lie to you. Like
yeah, it's like I don't want
you want to hear the truth. Like nobody,
that's recovery community though.
Nobody wants to hear the truth. And then they're like, no, dude, I really fucked up. And you're like, I drank and drove and I did all the rest of this stuff. And so did I.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And me too. And all of the validation that came along with telling my truth began opening up this amazing door of recovery.
100%.
Yeah.
So I just have to say really quick, you're talking about limiting beliefs, and I think we were actually, before we hit record, we were talking a little bit about authenticity. And so because I like to bring authenticity into every single episode.
Here she goes again.
I'm sorry. I can't help it.
It's okay. I did it last episode. I was like, like, I'm going to pull the Julie card.
It fits everything. Okay. So my recovery really started when I started reading the book Rewired by Erica Spiegelman. And I've talked about that here before, but there's, you know, basically, I want to say 10 or 12 different areas of your life that you kind of start investigating. The first one is authenticity. And that's like the foundation for all of recovery, right? Is knowing who you are, knowing what you really believe, being true to that. And then the second foundational piece of that book is honesty. And I kind of realized, like, once you put those two things together, you have authenticity is basically being honest with yourself. And then the honesty piece is being honest with the other people in your life. And if you have those two pieces, everything else is going to fall into place. Your relationships are going to improve. Like, you know, just all the different parts of life, they come together in a way that you can live with them and accept them and handle them if you can just be honest with yourself and then be honest with other people.
Authenticity is something that I always thought I was good at. But then when I got into this career, I went from being a caregiver who drank all the time, got sober, and then went and got my real estate license and started my own business. And I had this idea in my head of what I was supposed to look like, what I had to dress like, what I had to talk like, who was I going to be? And it was like I was playing a part and I felt like it didn't fit right. Never mind that most of the other agents drank all the time. And I was like, who do I even hang out with? Like, what do I do? How do I learn this stuff? And I got like all these business clothes that I thought I was supposed to wear. And now the last like 5 years, you know, that was the first couple of years of the business. And now it's like, I just am who I am. I'm like out on social media as far as being sober, you know, and whatever. I don't care. Like, if you don't want to work with me, that's fine. I have a lot of people in my recovery community that choose to work with me because of it, you know? And I just like put it all out there because it's just who I am. And like, if you don't like me, I don't care anymore. I used to really care about that. And now it's like, okay, well, that's cool. So, like, we don't have to be friends. There's, like, billions of other people in the world. It's totally fine, you know?
Here's something honest. Not everyone is meant for us, and we aren't meant for everyone else either.
Exactly. Right.
It's just how it works. I'm going to wrap this up, and I don't have to say a whole heck of a lot because you guys were awesome on this episode. You guys covered so much ground. It was, I love it. So long and the short of it, Rely We Tell is baggage that we're going to hold and carry until essentially we correct it. And once we start getting honest, all we do is end up with the freedom at the end of that tunnel. Plain and simple. I want to say thank you, Kenny. Thank you, Adam. And thank you, Emily, for joining us on this episode today. Really awesome. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having me on.
It was so fun.
Yeah, thank you, guys. That was a great conversation. Thanks for listening to this episode of Through the Glass Recovery Podcast. Remember that when you like and subscribe or when you rate and review our podcast, it means the podcast platforms will make sure it gets spread to more people who need to hear these conversations. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week.